This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
You know, the United States of America is, of course, a country. It's a country and a nation, right? And when we think about what a nation is, it's a set of ideals, a set of ideals based on a culture. And when we think of America, we think of values. And that's what I think of when I think of today's guest. Dave Bray, also known as Dave Bray USA on social media, he's a musician, and this is a treat. I've had a lot of actors on here. I've had authors, many authors, but I haven't had a musician yet. And listening to his album, Music on a Mission, it's really an awesome combination of both music and storytelling. Dave goes into the significance of every song he puts onto this album. And it's kind of like this holistic unit, right? The whole album kind of comes together. And when you're listening to it, it kind of almost induces a flow state because, you know, I was listening to it. I was doing some work while I was listening to it and really like just put me in the zone as far as work. But the music and the stories, they're all centered around values. And Dave is somebody who's close to God, who's very, very religious, but also very patriotic. And he goes into why he loves this country, why he has the faith that he has, and, you know, his love for all things American. And you know, there's this mistake out there that I think a lot of people make where they automatically associate that with being political, right? And there's this idea that if you love America, you are associated with a certain political, you know, orientation, more conservative, things like that, which, yeah, Dave is. But I think we should all love America. I think all of us should love this country that gives us so much opportunity and that, you know, so many people have gone out there and fought for and died for. And, you know, that's really been the theme of the last couple of episodes that I put up, you know, from Michael Reagan talking about Normandy and the sacrifices made there. But here with Dave actually taking this and putting it into an art form and expressing it in both his music and his storytelling, I think it's a beautiful thing. Dave's also a veteran of the United States Navy, served as an FMF corpsman alongside Marines. And, you know, I really, really awesome guy, really awesome album. I highly suggest you check it out. If you haven't been in this podcast before, my name's Chris Albert, and this is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What do we do here? Well, this is a podcast that's based on delivering solutions to the U.S. military veteran community to help them to live their best lives. Why do we do it? Over the past decade and a half, we've faced a really high veteran suicide rate, a really high rate of veteran homelessness, really high rates of chronic disease in the veteran community. And, you know, there's a lot of people trying to raise awareness about these issues, and I think that's awesome. But I'm not here to raise awareness. I'm here to deliver solutions. That's what this podcast is about, for you to take something home with you, something that you can implement right away, that you can, you know, use to improve your life and to make your life better and to move yourself forward and to become a better version of yourself. And the, like I said, this is for the veteran community, but if you're not a veteran, stick around. Stick around, because everything we cover here, all the guests that I bring on, they all have bits of knowledge that can apply to anybody. And whether it's our interviews, whether it's our fitness notes on Wednesdays, whether it's warrior notes on, you know, becoming more mentally stronger on Fridays, everything we do here could apply to anybody. It's for the veteran community because that's where I come from. I served in the United States Marine Corps, and I want to bring the veteran community up. And so definitely check out the rest of these episodes. And all we ask in return is that you share these episodes out with people who can use them, who could be helped by them. And if you can, pay us the highest compliment by writing us a review on iTunes. I also want to mention that this podcast would not be possible without our good friends at F-Bomb Nutrition. Really awesome company. They make delicious packets of fats. And they've been sending their product overseas to the troops on the front lines who need to supplement their MRE sometimes with something that's both delicious and a healthy and nutritious snack. They're really famous for their macadamia nut butters. They make macadamia nut butters that are mixed up with chocolate, with sea salt, with pecan butter, with coconut butter. They're so good. Head over to www.dropanfbomb.com. Use the code WarriorSoul at checkout, and you'll get yourself 20% off of your first order. With that, let's get into this conversation with Dave Bray and talking about his new album, Music on a Mission. Dave Bray, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all, man. I've heard amazing things about you from good friends and listen to your album, man, and it was absolutely awesome. Music on a Mission. Let me ask you this. There's both a music aspect and a storytelling aspect to your album. And what made you do the storytelling side?
Well, I think when I started creating the songs and recording the songs in the studio, I found myself working, you're in a booth, you're sitting there, and, you got the mic in front of you. And between the delineation and the conversations you have between you and your in-house studio producer and your recording engineer compared to your out-of-house producer, whereas that's the guy making the tracks, there was always a communication that I was trying to continuously reestablish. And being able to, express those emotions, those feelings, and to have them come across from the way that I wanted to come across in the actual music side, I really sort of overindulged in explaining to those guys what I was going for. So in a sense, I wanted to continue that and bring that in. I didn't want, for the first time, I wanted, a lot of people say, I like to listen to music to escape. And that's great. And music, certain songs can make you want to listen to Enya. Listen to Enya, man. Go escape your Enya deal, right?
Yeah.
So I was wanting to do the opposite. I wanted to ground people in the now and really make them connect to what was being said in the songs. So basically, like you said, there's a storyteller aspect to the album Music on a Mission. It's a narrated storyteller album. So every other track, you'll hear me speaking and I'll talk to you. I'm just in your ears. It's nothing special. I just kind of say, hey, listen, this song is about this or this song is about that. And we can explore what some of those narrations are about. But I wanted definitely to hone them in on what they were about to listen to. And that was the important part of the narration process, to give them something to listen, not only to, but something to listen for.
And, throughout the album, there's a lot of themes there. There's love of faith, love of God, love of country. And I think that's absolutely awesome. But, we're sitting here on November 1st, 2018, and we're in the midst of what I think is probably one of the most divisive and crazy election cycles that we've ever been through, minus the last one. And it seems like the country is so divided right now. What do you think can start the healing and to start to bring us back together as one country, one nation, to start to see each other as brothers and sisters rather than, just shouting at each other and going crazy at each other all the time?
That's a great question. And I think honestly that Music on a Mission does that. The album does that. It's the perspective from the middle. Okay. So if you look at all the citizens in America, pretty much you can draw a line and say, most of these people think this way. Most of these people think that way. And then you have the children in this country who haven't been taught how to think yet. So they haven't put themselves on either side of that line. And you look at the the nation as a whole of how we are going to leave it to that group of children. And what is the narrative? What is that going to look like? How are we going to pass along this country? Mm-hmm. And Music on a Mission is the view from the center. It's the view from the middle. It expresses what is best for our kids. And I feel like a nation that does right by its children will eventually do right by itself. So just like in the military, you know, you served, I was Navy, I was Marine Corps as well. I served as an FMF doc. So I went kind of through two basic training things. Where does your company commander, your drill sergeant, they speak from the middle. They speak from, and they walk down the middle of that aisle. And you have those two entities, port and starboard side, staring each other down. And although there are differences in each of those sides, and there's different perspectives and races and colors, and you still have that one center point, that one cognitive point that unless you decide that you are going to listen and open your ears to, then both sides are going to fail. Because if you'll recall, that's how you got PT'd, or that's how you got destroyed. Hey, port watch, go. You guys are running today. You know, you can't get your racks right. You guys are running today. So port watch leader, it's your problem. You fix it. But that narrative from the center is lost. Both sides will claim through what they speak that they are speaking from a level of playing field and fair and balanced. And you've heard all the catchphrases and cliches, but no one, not one of them, isn't trying to sell you on what their belief system is and the way you should think. So I believe in taking it from almost a juvenile perspective and looking up and saying, you know, mom, dad, what are you fighting about? Well, I don't understand this. And doing it on a broader scale and saying, hey, left, you know, liberals, hey, right, you know, the Republicans, these huge super PACs of people that are just at each other's throat, clambering over the dollars and the taxpayer dollars. You know, at the end of the day, if you'll ask any side, left or right, they'll both say, oh, I'm a patriot. I want what's right for this nation. I want what's right for the next generation. But their actions are completely different. So like I say, I come back to faith. I come back to God on the album Music on a Mission. I come back to what's right for the next generation that's coming. I come back to what's right for our kids, and my prayer and my personal mission behind this entire thing is to say, okay, you're allowed to have your perspectives. You're allowed to have your beliefs. But when those beliefs start trickling into more than just your beliefs and turns into, you know, a group hate or one side firmly standing up to the point where you are going to take violence into your own hands, that's where it needs to change. You're not doing right by anybody by doing that. So again, the perspective of Music on the Mission and my mission itself is to bring people together in that space in the middle and find that common ground where people can see eye to eye and realize what's best for the next generation and our country in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting that you use that example of the military, because, you know, I just remember not really seeing race the whole time while I was there. I mean, it existed, but, you know, we saw each other as green and we didn't really look beyond that. And what we really focused on was the mission at hand, the job that we had to do. And I think that's what gets lost in this whole amalgam of just criticism and negativity spewed back and forth, to the point now where I don't think we can really believe the news media as much as we used to anymore. You know, it's insane. So, and I really liked that theme throughout your album. It's really just about love, and it's about bringing people together, and it's about getting people to understand these, you know, universal things: God, country, patriotism. I think that's amazing.
Absolutely. And they're shared themes. I mean, you're on a life raft and you're in the middle of the ocean. Nobody wants to do what's wrong by the raft. Okay. If you see somebody out there, you know, doing a butterfly knife and just playing around, messing around with a butterfly knife on a life raft, or they catch a fish and they're sitting there trying to gut it on the life raft, use my back. You know what I mean? Use my back to gut the fish. Do not get the knife close to the raft. Right. So that's kind of what we're up against here. We're such a short-term thinking society in this day and age that no one is preparing not only for the next season of change, but nobody's preparing for the next day to come. I mean, everybody is lingering and teetering on this. It's, you know, it's all this, all right now, or it's nothing. Or it's all this, it's all right now, or it's civil war. It's all this, it's all right now, or it's impeachment of the president. And, you know, unfortunately, those short-term issues and those short-term platforms that you're standing upon are not what is 100% important for this nation to go on and continue. What we are forgetting is our life raft is our Constitution. You know, that is what the people of all around, that's what the caravan's coming for. They're coming for the Constitution. You know, and when we look at that Constitution, we say to ourselves, okay, yeah, it came from a different time or a different era, you know, they didn't understand this. That's crap. It was such a broadly thought, it was created by the brightest minds that freedom and free speech and free capitalism and free trade could possibly put together to create. And we are doing nothing but slowly amending it to death. And I again, when I talk about this on Music on a Mission, I just basically say, hey, listen, you know, that Constitution is our life raft. We should all be clinging to that first and solving the other problems second. So that's kind of where I'm seeing this thing, man. I'm just, like I said, more concerned about the next generation than where we are today.
Well, the other part of it is, if you really look at life as it is, I mean, it's better than it ever was. Right. If you really look at life the way it is today, you know, we're living in what I would consider probably some of the best times ever to exist for humanity. We don't have major wars between states going on right now. We don't have a World War One or World War Two type situation. We don't have a Great Depression. We've eradicated a lot of disease. It's easier for somebody to be a human now than it ever was. And something you said on your album was, you know, when you're thinking about grace, you're not just thinking about those vistas or the land, because that's just evidence of God. But you think about those times when there was real danger out there, when there were shots going over your head, when you realize that you were saved right then and there. I think that's what a lot of people are missing right now. They're focusing too much on the negativity. They're focusing too much on the things that we don't have, and not focusing on how blessed we are in all this time that human beings have been on this earth, to live in this time and place where for all intents and purposes, I mean, we have it easy.
I mean, as far as, yeah, absolutely. But the sustainability of that is highly unlikely, unfortunately. I mean, if somebody sent me a meme the other day, and they know I'm a huge Tool fan, right? So I love the band Tool. They sent me a Tool fan or a Tool meme, and it says, if you think you're having a bad day, just remember that the earth is 450 like billion or trillion years old, and that you get to be on it at the same time that Tool is on it. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, I could wrap my head around that. Right. So, the sustainability and you're right. The ease of life, is pretty chill at this point in time. I don't feel like I need to go out and, you know, set traps and check traps and reassess my, you know, my home every day. Is it going to survive the winter? I don't need to, you know, harvest grain and store. We're not in, you know, hunter-gatherer mode where we have to continuously move or, you know, migrate to be able to survive and live off the land. You're right. That, in that sense, you're 100% correct. In another sense, the sustainability of that and the mental health of living in that are two totally different things. I'm a firm believer that, yes, I don't have to go out and hunt and gather, but I do need to be able to provide that food for my family. So I do hunt, not as an essence of going out and trying to kill a trophy deer, but as an essence of, hey, just in case, and not only for that, but for my own personal mental stability and mental strength, I need to know that if you know, God forbid something happens, EMP, you name it, and we are not, you know, every Walmart gets taken over by terrorist nations or whomever, and they start rationing food. I don't want to have to count on those people. I don't want to have to count on a grocery store trip. And that is what I mean, like the sustainability. And there's entire generation gaps, most of them in large metropolis areas, who have absolutely no idea, have never been exposed to any sort of outdoorsmanship, have never been exposed to any type of survival, a camping experience, let alone a hunting experience or a fishing experience or any type of survival experience where they, if necessary, could feed themselves, let alone their own families and their own situation. So, you know, not to get doomsday prophecy, EMP hits over the Northeast. Boston shuts down. New York shuts down. Philly shuts down. Baltimore shuts down. Pittsburgh shuts down. And the trickle out of people of the cities, because now no longer can they get and gain food after about 3 days, I think, is the longest sustainable non-replenishable food source. Now, don't get me wrong. You'd be able to bring in ships. But I'm saying, let's break that down. Let's smash it into a week. Let's say they don't have food. They're going to start moving and migrating out into the countryside, which is going to be a problem for a lot of people. It takes a certain amount of acreage for every human being to sustain life if you start breaking that down. And when, again, we're going down the rabbit hole.
Right.
If you would break down all those cities and have those people leave those cities because there's no sustainable life there. There's nothing to feed upon. There's nothing to drink. There's no good water. If that breaks down, what is going to happen to us as a nation? And that's the mental health part that I feel like we're teetering on, that we are not keeping a certain level of balance in. We are so wrapped around tech and device and making our lives even more and more simple each day that we're diving farther and farther into the technical and farther away from the necessity side of life.
Right, and I agree with you there. I think that there are far too many people with their heads out in the clouds thinking that we should get even further away from our existence as humans and as animals, right? Because we do need to know how to survive, even in this modern society. One thing people get annoyed with me about, I keep a 9mm right here by my side while I'm working all day. And the reason why I keep it here isn't because I'm a psychopath or it's not because I'm paranoid, but because if something happens, I want to be ready for it. I want to be ready for it. And I agree with you 100% about it. The thing I think though is that, there's two aspects of what you're talking about. Number one, mental health starts to go down if we get too far away from our primal past. It does.
Absolutely.
If you're not out in nature, if you're not out in the wilderness, if you're not seeing trees, if you're not seeing animals, if you're not seeing nature, then you start to mentally deteriorate in certain ways. And I'm a big believer in that. Number two, I think we're in this instance where people think they can say anything to anyone. They can say anything to anyone. In the communication, we're seeing that through Twitter, through social media. And, you know, you look at my YouTube comments, people will say things to me that I know they won't say to my face, right? And,
sure.
And that's definitely something there. But I definitely agree with you on that. My point is, I think that, you know, with things being as easy as they are, people are looking for more things to be divisive about.
You're right. And it's because of that ease of self-expression in a way. You know, if you know that you're allowed to express yourself in any certain way just to get a reaction out of somebody, it's too easy. It's right. Too easy to be able to drift away from society and into your own cocoon and come out a monster than it was before, because there was checks and balances. You had to be a certain place at a certain time. Now you have more people working behind computers and they turn into, you know, essentially those trolls that we're talking about. Like you said, they'll say whatever they want, but they won't actually come, you know, they won't show up at a show or show up at a performance and bring it to your face. But like you said, there's truly something to be said between nature, mankind, and technology stealing that essence away from us.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, and just to switch gears for a second. So you were an FMF corpsman in the Navy, served with the Navy and with the Marine Corps on the green side. When you got out, what brought you toward music?
Well, I was actually involved. I did the garage band thing. You know what I mean? 15, 16 years old. I was in a garage band and did the talent show in high school. Fell in love with music that last summer of high school. And, you know, I was kind of at a crossroads. I was given the opportunity to, I was delayed at an entry program for a year. Mm-hmm. And then the last week or 2 weeks, I can't remember what it was. I broke my ankle and they said, you know, I went up to MEPS to try to go in. They said, you're not going to be able to go in on a bad ankle like that. So they gave me the opportunity to back out, basically waver out and just be like, you know. And it was one of those things that I look back upon. I'm saying, what would have happened if I would have wavered out and just and chase down music because that's all I cared about right then and there. You know what I mean? But music is something that I feel it gets us through times. It gets us and bridges us over, you know, it bridges us over lapses. It harnesses memory. There's so many things music does to us and how it does it to us physically and emotionally that I fell in love with. It was those moments where I knew that if I put in a set of headphones and put in a record that, you know, an hour later, I was going to feel a different way. And I knew how I was going to feel after I listened to it. It was not just entertainment for me. Music has always been an outlet to communicate something far beyond where and what we see on a daily basis. You know, I can't walk up to you and just start speaking the words that are on my record and for you to get goosebumps, but you put them to my music and then you mix those words and how they're delivered and you listen to them in a set of headphones and all of a sudden you look down at your arms and you're like, holy cow, you know, my arms are standing up on my, you know, the back of my neck right now and I'm feeling something. That feeling is what got me to love music.
I noticed so, and I noticed this when I was listening to your album, there is a very strong, it's almost like a guided meditation, right? It's almost like a guided meditation because you have the story and you have the song. The tone of the song is extremely soothing. It's not like harsh. It's very soothing and it really helps to set a mood in the room. And I was listening to your album while I was doing work. And a lot of times I'll listen to, cause I, my playlist is crazy. I got Public Enemy. I got NWA. I got Waylon Jennings. I got David Allan Coe. I got all yeah. kinds of, and that's a product of being in the Marine Corps, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was listening to yours, I was listening to the album and I noticed, oh my God, I'm getting so much work done because it was putting me into the zone. Was that a purposeful thing? Did you want it to be kind of meditative?
Yeah. So out of the songs that I recorded on my last, what I call session. So I'll break everything down into sessions. There's like five other songs that didn't make it on the record. They just didn't fit the mood. They didn't fit into a place that was, what's the word for it? I guess the word is, like you said, it's just emotionally charged. It didn't fit into that restorative sort of feel. So they got kicked off the album. And then as I started building it out as a narrative piece, sort of storyteller book or audiobook meets music, I realized like even the order of the songs had to be right. Everything had to be done purposefully. And it's one of the things that I do. There's a lot of hidden things that I do in songs that a lot of people don't even catch. But there are certain approaches to music that, again, if somebody says, what do you listen to? And I'm right there with you. I'm one of those people that says, I listen to everything, bro. Like everything, you know? So I have that same list of songs, just like you. I'm all over the place. Pantera, you know, Public Enemy, all those, you know, all that stuff. And I wanted to create something for those people who are not so stuck in country or so stuck in hip hop or so stuck in metal that they can't see anything beyond that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where the Dave Bray USA Music on a Mission album fits. It's a personal connection to the listener. It's not something you pop on at a party and say, hey, let's get down. You know what I mean? Let's throw some darts. It's not that album. And I think a lot of musicians chase that album. But I knew from the beginning that this was something different. This was something that you put in your car and you just kind of zone out and all of a sudden the album's over and you're like, holy cow, I just drove, you know, 150 miles. That's the kind of record it is. And like you said, you put the album on and you go and you clean your house or you do whatever needs to get done or you finish up, you know, working on your car. But it is definitely one of those focus pieces that I don't know that anybody has ever quite done it like that. So that's what I was excited about first. And again, the music is very chill, but it does have these powerful sort of cinematic moments that draw you up to them. And I think that's what's special about the record.
That's interesting to hear you talk about that because those are aspects of artists that, you know, I don't think we catch a lot of the time, but it's, you know, when you're writing a song, you're not just working on that song. When you're working on an album, all the songs got to fit together in a certain way if you're going to try and create that kind of mood. And so it's really like this holistic thing that you're doing. And the only example I can think of, I'm watching, The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix, and the cinematic way they shot it, you know, there's ghosts hidden in the background. There's all these things. So it keeps you like looking at everything. And I kind of get that kind of same attention to detail, that same attention to art, that same attention to everything that you put into the album from what you did there.
Yeah. And that's a great way to put it. I mean, I didn't cram five guys in a room. This is not the collaborative efforts that you may have heard of, you know, some of my other albums that I've done before, you know, other guys trying to pitch in and put in, you know, hey, I think this needs to be this. This was specifically me, a producer, and a sound engineer. And when you do that and you take away all these other elements of influence, two things happen. Number one, all the blame goes on to you. So if it sucks, you know, if it stinks, you're going to be like one that everybody's like, man, this is horrible. The producer's going to look at you and be like, bad idea, dude. Why'd you waste your time and your money? And your engineer's going to be like, bad idea. Don't put my name on the record, right? So when that happens, but what else happens is you have these very subtle, instead of being in a studio environment or being in a production environment with numerous people, I want my drums louder here. I want, you know, my guitar louder. This part needs a scream. We got to do doubles over here. When you have these subtle nuances and those three people can sit in a room and be like, and make these little suggestions, you don't have these giant waves of influence sort of jumping in and changing things and then recreating a new direction of the song. What I loved about working with my guys, was the fact that when I presented the idea, it was either a, yeah, I think we should do this, or no, I don't think we should do it, but I'll record it anyway. And when I said, you know, want to do it with music on a mission, there was definitely, we had to delineate and say, hey, listen, yes, this would be a great song for another record, but if you're shooting for music on a mission, I don't think that that's it. So we didn't even open up the can of worms on a ton of songs that are out there, because of the fact it didn't fit God, country, faith, patriotism, next generation, what's best. Those were the highlights that we wanted to keep in mind when we did the record. So again, you know, a little bit off topic, but if that opens up sort of some idea for you how we went about doing it. And like you said, all these little perfections are things that it's just me and that producer. That producer wants to create the best track he possibly can. And if I would point some things out, he would say, yeah, you know what? You're right. That does stand out as wrong. It wasn't like five guys trying to create their own specific personal track. It was all of us were chipping in entire pieces of artwork together and trying to find the best way for them to mesh.
Wow. Wow. When you're working on your music, what's your daily routine like? Like, how do you set up your day? Because I know you got to find that time of the day where you could be creative in order to do that, right? What's your day like when you do that?
So my days are like a block out. So my first half of my day up until about 1 o'clock is, you know, there's personal focus on faith first thing in the morning. I'm usually the first person up. I get a half an hour of Bible study or something along those lines. Maybe just personal meditation and prayer. Get that done. Owe it to God, say thank you, and just be blessed for that day. And then the sun starts to come up. It's about getting those kids up, and wife and kids get moving. We get a breakfast or something going. Kids are off to school, motor them out. Then it's gym time, self-respect, you know, take care of your body. Get those things out of the way first, right? That brings you to right around 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then when I get home, my wife and I, we go through the business plan, business models of the day. Again, I'm involved in numerous different entities. I'm not just a musician. I also own an apparel company. I work along the side as an influencer on social media. I work along the side of nonprofits and nonprofit organizations and helping them build what they are doing. And then we look at all that in general. My wife is key element to this portion because honestly, I'd be all over the place. She's the one who sits me down and says, hey, what do you think about this, this, and this? How can we grow in these directions? And we take a few hours and we just work together. Then we plot out what we're going to do for the rest of the day or rest of the week, social media wise. But from there, that's when I have a few hours to myself in the middle of the day. And I grab a guitar. I have a studio in my basement. When I say studio, it's just a room, you know, that I have a sound system in and that I can plug into. And it would be just like playing at a bar or a live setting that I can start working on songs and creating something in an environment that I feel comfortable. And I think that word environment is the key element there. knowing that you've got the necessities of the day for the most part out of the way, knowing that there's nothing stacked up against your afternoon, knowing that you have a window of blank canvas and time to work with. And I think that portion and that process and that area right there is just as important as the final product you create. And if you're not finding that area and space to which to work, your final product is going to reflect it. It'll sound rushed. It won't sound like you've honed in on what the song was about or what you were going for. I mean, my wife, poor woman, will listen to a song 40 times a day because I will work a tune over and over and over and over and make corrections and over and over and make corrections until the whole thing sings and sounds the way it needs to sound as a song. And I think those are the elements, man. That's it. That's where you find your best work. And hey, there's days that I go down there and just open up all these old tunes from the past and just jam. You know, it's not always about just creating, because sometimes you go back through your old stuff and find something you missed, pull it back out and recreate over top of that.
That, as far as having that relationship in your life with your wife, that is something that I kind of want to slam home here. Having somebody like that in your life brings power to you, right? And young guys out there listening to this, make sure that when you find a partner, it's the right partner for you. Somebody that you can be committed to, somebody that is going to support you, somebody who you can support in return. It's got to be a mutual and symbiotic relationship there. And everybody I've ever talked to who's successful has one of those relationships. So really important there. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, I met my wife, she was 19 years old. I was 22, fresh out of the military. You know, her and I just started hanging out, and it was one of those things where it was group of friends, and then her and I always end up splitting off together, and then before long it was just her and I. And you know, fast forward a few years, we got in an apartment for a year. I said, you know, I'm not down with sitting here throwing money away in a one-bedroom apartment that's, you know, isn't worth the price what we're paying. We could, you know, it was at the time we could buy something. And so we bought a house. It was a two-unit. Her and I started working on the upstairs. It was total disaster. We ripped off, you know, inches of wallpaper, and it was an old Victorian in downtown York, and we built that out and rented it, and that became a passive source of income for us. And then we you know, we got the downstairs somewhat fixed up, and then we got to the point where we're like, okay, what's next? And it was marriage and kids, and we wanted to do that together, and so we did. And you know, there was an 8-year time frame from that point until I actually asked her to marry me. So I put her through the ringer. You know what I mean? We bought a house together. There was a lot of things that happened that were tested before her and I decided to make a commitment of children and putting our complete lives into one another's hands. I mean, even after that point, you know, we both worked jobs. I was in logistics and trucking. I was working for BAE Systems, building Bradleys. I was doing all kinds of things. She was doing, she was a billing agent for optical stores in the region. So like, if you break down our entire lives, there's tons of these tests and elements and just constant issues of friction that we continue to put out. And the ones that you can get past, whether they're financial, whether they're personal, whether they're, you know, issues in relations or whatever, the ones that you can get past do nothing but solidify that foundation. Mm-hmm. If you have forgiveness for the other person, that forgiveness is a key element to any relationship. You have to be willing to say, you know what, you made a mistake. I'm going to give you another chance. I'm going to give you another opportunity. And I think that is what created the strong bond that I've had with my wife, married now since 06. So what, we're going on 12 years, and, you know, been together for 20 plus. So, I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, she has absolutely been my rock. She's been with me since some of my first band, you know, trying out and being in bar bands. And then she's been with me through the Madison Rising years. She actually came on full time to work with Madison Rising. She was booking, PR, outreach, logistics. She was a vital part of that success of that band. And we just, like I said, since leaving and departing that band, we've decided, okay, what are we going to do? What do we do best? Well, I do music, and she does what she does with the outreach, the logistics, keeping everything in check, checks and balances, and booking. And she's just an animal at it. And I'd like to say that, you know, I could take all the credit for any successes that I've had, but I have to give the majority of it to her, and her ability to stand by me and believe in me and believe in what I do musically.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And again, that is something I can't emphasize enough to the guys out there and the girls out there. Make sure that you have someone in your life who can do that for you. Now, are you traveling quite a bit with the music now? Are you going around and doing a lot of live shows?
Yeah. So I custom built this product from the ground up. Okay. So Dave Bray, USA, Music on a Mission. The reason I did it as a one man act, and I say one man, my wife being the ghost behind the machine, so to speak. The reason I did it like this was because I can now form fit to any show. I do live full band stuff. I was on tour with Ted Nugent this summer, and that was a full band aspect, right? So you got all the drums, you got guitars, you got keyboards, you got everything, right? And then you have the sort of storyteller acoustic all the way down to the bottom, just me, a guitar, and a microphone. And then you get that super intimate. And then there's everything else in between. So I also do a lot of black tie events. I do a lot of work with foundations and nonprofits. So everything in between there that you can imagine, from stadiums, football, baseball, basketball, opening ceremonies. And then from there, it keeps going out to all the nonprofits I work for that do fundraisers, black tie events. I do cocktail hours. Plus I also do auctioneering. Plus I do emceeing. So you put all that stuff together. Finally, there's an entertainment aspect that comes along with this. And the importance of being more than one thing. If I just said, okay, I'm in a band and this is what the band does, you've already chopped three of your limbs off. If you have the ability to be a singer and a songwriter, why not be more than that? Be something else. That I was being hired by over 20 different foundations every year. Every other week, I was flying to a different destination. And every time I got there, they would have a different national anthem singer. I was like, you know what? I can do the national anthem for you. Mm. And then I would do it. And they're like, my gosh, you have to come back and sing the national anthem next year and play. So that's what that turns into. Then one year, their auctioneer bailed out. So I did the national anthem for them. I did the few ceremonial songs that I do. Some of the stuff is like Amazing Grace or God Bless America. And then the auctioneer bailed out at the end of the night, and I said, give me the microphone. And I busted into my auctioneering deal, right? So you got to continuously grow. And I think that that's part of, being anything in this world, whether you're a salesman, whether you are an engineer, whether you are, a hunting guide, it doesn't matter what you're doing. In this day and age, you can't just be just that. You're not going to survive being just anything. You have to be just plus, okay? And to look for that plus in every situation that you go is something that I've grown into. And again, yes, it's a full band, but it's entertainment, but it's more than that. I can fit be able to mold into any shape. And I think that is what's different about Dave Bray USA personally.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, when you're out on the road and you're traveling around, or you're doing a live show, what's it feel like to be up there live in front of people and actually going through this? What's going through your head?
Well, that's the best part of it. I mean, the stage is the sanctuary, right? Because in this day and age, if you drop the ball on the stage, everybody's going to see it. You know, it's going to go on YouTube. It's going to go on Facebook Live. There's constantly people with cell phones up. So just like touring with Ted Nugent, I was out with him, and this was the first time I had ever gone out with this new band of guys. They were all out of Buffalo. And the first time I took that stage with those guys, we had had one rehearsal before taking that stage. And quite honestly, there was a lot of fear. We had run the set three or four times, and it sounded good in studio, but how was that going to transpose over to a live audience? And that was very concerning for me, because this would be, one of the first times that I had taken Music on a Mission and put it in front of like a major audience, a couple thousand people. So I wasn't sure of what the response was going to be. As soon as I got on that stage, everything changed. All those fears, all that trepidation, seeing that audience stand up and just like fist in the air and being pumped about what I was singing, how I was singing it, and understanding what the music and what the mission was, after that first show, all that goes away. But to be able to connect with that many people at one time and have them not just connected audio, like through listening, but to be physically engaged, to stand up and be engaged, to stand up and throw your fist in the air and be engaged. That's a totally different, it's a totally different animal. And it's what every band goes for. It's what every speaker goes for. And, you know, that's the hardest thing to do, is connect with every member of that audience in some way, shape, or form.
Wow. And, you know, obviously you're dedicated to keeping your body in shape, to keeping yourself healthy. And it's an essential part, I think, of being able to perform like you do. What is your fitness routine like? What do you do as far as training goes?
I try to do the shock system, because I have a tendency to get really, really just, I overdo one thing for way too long. So if it's cardio, I just get so into cardio. That's all I want to do. Cardio, cardio, cardio. And it seems seasonal to me. I guess I switch up during the seasons. Just this last couple of weeks, I did a 3-day dry water fast. So there was absolutely no food. It was nothing but water. Did a dry water fast, incorporated with two saunas. And then the last 2 days of the fast were juices. Mm-hmm. And I was up to about 215, and it was junk weight from the summer tour. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been eating good. I was just trying to do a little bit of, you know, a little bit of push-ups and whatever I could do in a gym at like a hotel. And I was feeling kind of down, mentally sluggish. And the fast is like, wow, you want to talk about, I don't know if you've ever done them. Have you ever done the fasting?
Oh yeah. I've done a lot of fasts. Yeah.
Yeah. So the 3-day dry water fast is for your listeners. No, there's zero food. And it's an exercise in mental dominion over that which, you know, is usually bad for you, which is the junk you put in your mouth. For me, it was anyway. I was eating a lot of bad foods. I didn't want to try to close one door and open another right away and say, okay, well, all I'm going to do is eat salads for the next 3 days. I didn't want to do that and have to deal with making of the salads. And I wanted to use the fasting period to focus on something else, spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, day one is the tough one. You get through it and you're just like, okay, I made it. Your family's looking at you weird. You're sitting around a dinner table drinking water. You're just trying to make conversation that's not about, you know, my kids are 8 and 10. Why are you eating again? Oh yeah. Okay. So, you know, you're like, you get through that first day, you get through day two, and things start to change in your body. Your bloodstream starts to, you know, filter different things in different ways. And it was pretty intense, man. It was one of my first water fasting experiences, and to get through the 3 days was tough. I'm going to go back in probably at the end of the month, before, you know, right before Thanksgiving, I believe I'm going to check into that again and do another 3 days. But that, and again, I do a lot of my own body weight, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm not a big fan of, you know, huge muscles, because I feel like after that muscle's not being used, it just turns into junk. So I go light, I go grizzly, and I try to stay fit and tone and just carry what I need.
That's awesome. Yeah. Important aspect of the fast. I mean, the fasts are great because, and I don't want to venture too far out into the scientific weeds, but it kills off a lot of the disease mitochondria that build up, and it, you know, it's been a part of almost every major religious practice there ever was. I mean, fasting is a huge thing. There is a meditative aspect of it. You start to feel sharper. I know a lot of hunters, before they go out, they actually like to go out and hunt while fasted, because their senses are almost heightened from it. But important aspects for anybody who does decide to try that at home, you know, do make sure that you are getting minerals from somewhere, like salt or something like that, because that's the one thing that could end up throwing a wrench into you. If you're not getting enough minerals, you end up cramping up, you feel like crap. But if you get those minerals, you'll feel really, really great.
Some of my routine was also incorporated with the heat stress and sauna, which releases a lot of that out of your, you know, fat stores and things like that. So that was a huge element to the fasting process. You know, it wasn't just completely, you know, immobile and, you know, laying around. There was definitely that heat stress situation, but loved every minute of it. I mean, it's painfully beautiful to be able to say you made it through it, and you know, you're grateful for that first meal for sure.
We've got to wrap up in a second, but I wanted to ask you a couple more questions here. You've been active in helping out law enforcement, helping out the families of law enforcement.
Absolutely.
And can you tell us a little bit about that and a little bit about Relentless Defender Apparel?
Sure. I released the song Last Call a few years back. I put out a video with an organization called LESMA, L-E-S-M-A, and they're a law enforcement watchdog agency. The video went, I don't know if viral, 1.8 million views or something like that on YouTube. It had been used in countless other videos that have gotten millions and millions of views. So that song, Last Call, is actually, it's another storyteller song. It basically is a law enforcement officer giving his last words to his wife, his kids, his children, his brothers and sisters in arms. And, you know, there's a really, really powerful moment where that person, you know, is very sentimental towards his wife. He's very sentimental and towards his kids. But he, you know, he gets to his brothers and sisters in arms and he basically just says, hey, raise a glass for me, kick some ass for me, ring a bell for me and send him straight to hell for me. And I think at the end of, you know, in deep down in every warrior spirit, you know, that's how we all want to be remembered, is, you know, with a fist in the air, you know, air and saying, you know, you'll never take me alive, by our brothers and sisters. And it was just, it was one of those songs that was compelling enough to get national attention. So, Relentless Defender Apparel, if people have never heard of it, is basically it's a grunt style or a nine line apparel or one of those that is directed around law enforcement, and their stuff is super duper cool. I love Aaron Slater and what he does. And that organization has given over $750,000 to the families of fallen law enforcement officers. And I wanted to work with them. So we actually created a Last Call shirt that has that tagline, ring a bell for me, send them straight to hell for me. And it's done up kind of like a whiskey bottle. So Last Call is also the name of his bar. But like I said, the shirt is available at relentlessdefender.com. And if you use the promo code Last Call, all caps, one word, LASTCALL, you'll get a discount there. And you can also show your support to the families of fallen law enforcement by wearing it. So yeah, again, Relentless Defender, relentlessdefender.com. And then the Last Call t-shirt, if it doesn't matter what you buy, if you use Last Call as your coupon code, it'll give you a discount, and then money will actually go towards the family of fallen law enforcement.
That's awesome. And how can people connect with you online? I know you've got your website, you've got a YouTube channel. Where can they find you and connect with you?
So obviously all social media outlets, Dave Bray, B as in boy, R-A-Y, Dave Bray USA. DaveBrayUSA.com is the website. And I also have an apparel company. It's called Brave Day USA. Brave Day USA is all about walking fearless in faith, sort of carrying the guide on and for the rest of the people around you, and wearing shirts and things that start up conversations about God and start up conversations about faith and start up conversations about spirituality. It's all about putting on the armor. So, yeah, DaveBrayUSA.com is the website. And then all social media is DaveBrayUSA. You can't miss it. The YouTube is filled with some great videos. Go check them out.
Outstanding. And, you know, most of our audience consists of our fellow veterans. Do you have any last words, any pieces of advice that you can give them as far as living their best lives?
Build a network. You are in one of the most prime establishments in the world for building a network. Build that network of people. Don't just get emails, get phone numbers, and don't just put in your phone. Write it down on a piece of paper. Build a network of people that you have grown accustomed to, and who are your friends, people that you trust, people that you know going into battle with have your back. I wish I would have done this. And I kick myself over and over. And I found some of those guys through social media, but a lot of time has gone by. And I wish that I would have kept them in my lives. I wish that I would have stayed close to them and kept that network, that group, that mentality, because, you know, platoon in, platoon out, you know what I mean? Stay together as you leave and as you get older. It's a valuable asset for your future. It's a valuable asset professionally. It's a valuable asset for what you guys end up doing when you guys get out. That is one of the biggest things. And then the other thing, you know, I say this quite often is, you know, stay the course. Don't be afraid to do 20 years in the military, 30 years in the military. You know, I'm, you know, 40 years old now and I'm sitting there going, why didn't I do more time in the military? I was silly. You know, go get that retirement and then start your life. the average human, by the time we are getting old, we're going to be living to be 100. So you got another 60 plus years to go do whatever you want to do, man. Go take your time and enjoy what you're doing, and then take advantage of the military and what they have to offer. Again, I wish I would have done longer. Looking back now, I kick myself, but it is what it is. I heard the Air Force has like a rock band now. What's up with that? Where was really? That when I was?
Really? Yeah, that's, man, crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. Well, they also said they had the hardest PT, and it was harder than the Marine Corps PT, which, oof, that video went viral a couple of years ago. But dude, number one, I want to thank you for coming on. Sure. Number two, I just want to acknowledge you. You know, it takes a lot of not only courage, but just sheer will to do what you're doing. And, you know, I think that for the guys at home and the gals at home who are listening to this, no matter what you're doing, put your heart, put your soul into it, put your passion into it. And, you know, it's more than just sitting there and waiting for something to happen. It's about taking action and making it happen. And Dave's done that, and now he's giving back. And I really appreciate that so much. So Dave Bray, thank you so much for coming on to the
Absolutely. And a huge shout out to Scott Husing. He's his number one best-selling book, Echo in Ramadi. Make sure you guys go check that out. Scott was nice enough to intro me to you, Chris. And I just, like I said, I appreciate Scott for all that he's done, not only for me, but for everyone else. He's definitely the spearhead, connecting the people, you know, veteran out there. He's an incredible guy to look up to and to mentor yourself after. The mentors are out there in the military, guys. That's the other thing. As you're in and serving, find that person you want to be in the military, mentor them. They have the time for you. Don't be afraid to ask them. They're out there.
Absolutely. Scott's book is one of the best books I've read as far as any books I've ever read. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I also want to give a big shout out to Joshua Prado for also making the connect as well. So,
absolutely, yep.
Guys, we'll be back at you next week, and want to thank you all for listening, and get out there and live your best lives while you can.